You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
The year is 3129. Mankind is adrift in the stars. Giant spaceships hurtle the last of humanity towards their destiny, whatever it may be. Only one thing can keep them going and power these great ships, will feed the minds and spirits of these people. And that is the last brewing company to survive in the future, Circle Brewing. So great was their product that they indeed became the legendary Earth Brewers. But, you know, it's right now, 2018, or maybe 2019, depending on when you're listening to this. And you can get Circle Brewing right by going into Austin, by stopping into their brewery on Breaker Lane. Or you can get it in convenience stores where there's all sorts of good stuff. Martin, you're from the future. What do you think?
Well, I tell you, Austin is a city with no shortage of breweries, but this is some of the best I've ever had.
Well, there you go. You can't ask somebody who's going to give you a truer thing about beer than Mr. Martin Thomas, because he's an alcoholic.
All right, guys, you know, it's time to, you know, it's dead of winter right now. We should probably head over somewhere, you know, there's a lot of nice sun, sand, girls, booze, FEMA tents, cheese sandwiches. You know, let's head on over to the Fire Festival.
Dude, that'd be awesome. I heard they're having on Pablo Escobar's Island, and they're going to have a whole bunch of supermodels from Instagram. It's going to be great.
Yeah, can I just spend my whole rent and just get there and have no money afterwards?
And we're just going to have a whole big Lord of the Flies situation. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Anyway, hi, guys. This is Shaquille from the Screener Squad here. We're here to talk about the brand new Netflix documentary, Fire, The Greatest Party That Never Happened. It's all about the infamous Fire Festival from 2017. And alongside me, I got my boys, Justin.
Hey.
And Ali.
Yes, hello. What's up?
Now, before we start, what did you guys know about the Fire Festival before coming into this? If you guys had any knowledge at all, like, did you guys, like, read about it on Twitter as it happened? Did you guys read about it, like, the day after? What was, like, how'd you guys find out about this whole shit show?
Honestly, I think there's a point in the documentary in which a photo goes viral, and we'll talk about that. I know about the photo, and that was basically kind of about it. I knew, like, a little bit. I knew that there was some music festival that just never happened. But honestly, I didn't really pay attention to the news that much. I know we even talked about it on the Midnight Tattack, where I usually am. And, but the thing is, it's, like, very little information was that I knew of. So this is mostly a surprise walking into this.
Yeah, no, I kind of the same thing where I'm like, I knew of it, and I heard some of the stories and rumors about it, but I didn't really dig as deep as I probably should have with the actual, like, conspiracy around it. And now I have, oh boy.
So I actually knew about this because I was on Twitter as it was happening. Like, it was like I didn't follow any of the people who this involved, but it was one of those things where, like, this big uproar of just like, yo, these people are stuck on this island of this fraudulent festival. Like, I knew nothing about the festival before it went down. Like, people started, like, sharing all these videos and pictures, and I was like, what the actual hell is this? People were making memes already. Like, I knew about the big disaster without knowing anything beforehand, so I was fascinated by how shit got this bad.
No, it's like a Shaq saying, that for people who don't know, the Fire Festival was a music festival created by Billy McFarlane and Ja Rule. What's the guy's real name?
Oh, Jeffrey Adkins, I think.
But something like that.
He hadn't done shit, at least recently. But they had this big partnership where they're like, hey, we're going to launch this huge, lavish music festival. And on paper, it sounds legit as hell. Like, this sounds literally like some American dream shit where it's on this big, beautiful island in the Bahamas that was once owned by Pablo Escobar. They said you'd be doing... just hanging out with supermodels and just on these beautiful beaches. Yeah. There'd be music, like crazy music acts and all this lavish. You'd basically be living the Instagram dream, as they call it.
The little build up to it is originally where Fire came from was this app to kind of like, let's say you wanted to book, because that's how Ja Rule got involved. Because I think Billy's like, oh, I want to book him for some event, but I'm like, I don't fucking know who to talk to. So he's like, well, let me create this app that you can basically, you know, you get all these celebrities on. So it's like, let's say you want to book somebody for a birthday party. There's a direct connection, almost like Twitter. And they wanted to make the music festival to promote the album. I'm like, yeah, all this sounds great. Like, I can just go on YouTube or I can go on my fucking phone and I can book Ja Rule if I have the money. That sounds like a great idea. Let's use this Fyre Festival. Let's use this music festival to advertise all these musicians and artists. I'm like, all this sounds really cool.
Exactly. And they got, like, really legitimately big names. Like, they got, like, Kanye West Good Music. They got the Migos, Lil Yachty. Like, all the big people of that time.
Yeah.
And
yeah, and they had all the Instagram, like, supermodels promoting them, like Emily Ratajkowski.
Yeah, her, Bella Hadid. Like, it was crazy. And none of that shit happened.
Oh, man.
When all the... Because the, like, fees were, like, astronomically high. Like, even for a music festival, shit was, like, around, like, 20,000, going upwards of, like, in the six
hundreds
digits.
Thousands at some point.
Hundreds of thousands. And they're promising, like, villas and all these beautiful resorts. And when the campers actually show up and they see, hey, these are like flimsy tents, nothing's prepared.
No, not just flimsy tents, like hurricane relief tents, like those ones you saw from after the disasters a few years back.
Exactly, like these shoddy mattresses. A bunch of the music acts, they all pretty much dropped out.
I don't think a single person actually showed up.
None of them.
Well, because they canceled them also right before when the first like wave of the news was happening. They're like, yeah, we're not going to bring any of these people over here.
Oh yeah, no, they end up because this whole documentary goes in. It's like it all starts off like a decent idea, but it's like it's going way too big, way too fast. Because yeah, they want to get all these musical acts in here, all these Instagram models, basically give you like what it's like to what you think life is. And then it slowly starts to fall the fuck apart.
Exactly. And then this whole documentary is essentially everything that leads up from a variety of perspectives from Jerry Media, who co-produced this as like the ones who are like tasked to promote this event, from certain members who are part of like the Fyre team, from various employees, from actual people who went to the event.
Yeah, they even cut, like, and some of the people who worked on in the Bahamas, and what's the island that it was? Like, Exumas? Oh, Exumas.
Exumas,
yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, like, some of the natives at Exumas who were hired for jobs.
And every time they cut to them, I felt awful. Because, from the get-go, you see, like, Billy as, like, kind of this confident, kind of frat boy, but kind of, he's still very confident. He's flaunting a lot of money. And then you realize, oh, no, he's vastly underprepared for this. And then you also realize, no, this dude's a fucking con artist.
Oh, like, he is a psycho. Like, even from the get-go.
He's a fucking sociopath. Like, he's a sociopath with a seemingly infinite amount of money. And then the big question from a lot of employees is, where the fuck is he getting this money from?
I had a better question. And, where did it all go?
Yeah, seriously.
Exactly. And as his... keeps going on, you're just fascinated by all this shit. Like, Justin, what was your thoughts going into this as they were like building up to the festival?
Oh man, like, I mean, that's the thing where you see all the stuff, like the good intentions, because I mean, from the get-go, I pretty much knew, no, this Billy guy is bad news. Like, I could see through him, where it's like, oh yeah, I got all these Maseratis, I got these supermodels, I got all this money, and I'm like, this can only end badly. But that's the thing where everyone else on the team seemed like those very, like, wide-eyed, idealistic, like, no, we want to make a music festival. It's going to be great kind of guys. And you just feel bad for them. Like, really.
Because they really did pitch it like this could, if it had worked, it could have been, like, the next Coachella. Like, this could have gone on so many different ways. And even then, they were, like, we're having these problems, and he's somehow finding a way to get money to buy all this, or allegedly buy all
this. Well, not even just getting money. He just tells people, spend money on this stuff. It's like, no, we don't have any money. No. Spend money on this stuff. And it's just the prices hike up like crazy. Like, even when they talk about the catering that they're trying to get for this place, it's like, yeah, we want to get this, like, five-star chef who's a worldwide celebrity, and that alone would cost, like, $6 million to fund food.
And we got one.
Yeah, and we have $1 million. It's like, there's no way we're going to get that dude.
And just... the whole time, even from the moment they pitch, because this whole thing is also just a very much a good analysis on the concept of FOMO, as they call it, or fear of missing out, especially within millennial culture. There's parts where it did feel a little condescending, but it's one of those things where, like, you that's how he got to this point.
But I think that is the point. It's like, yeah, it is condescending to millennials, but it's like, you guys, all you did, you saw, hey, look, Ja Rule. Oh, look, these celebrities. Yeah, I want to be a part of that without actually researching.
To be fair, they really did well construct that original promo footage.
Yeah.
When you see all the, like, the models on the beach and them swimming with pigs and drinking. And even then, a lot of people were just like, this is kind of irresponsible. Ali, what'd you think about that whole, like, early on promo footage? It did work conceptually.
The thing is, I don't know, maybe I lived under a rock for a lot of my life, so anytime I see lavish advertisement, I'm always like, what's the kick, like, what's the catch? So when I saw that, I was like, oh wow, so this is how they do it. And it's like, I slowly just started to hate every single person in this documentary, like every model, every person, because I'm like, you guys are so fucking fake. Oh my god.
And they're all complicit. Like, seriously, like every one of them have a responsibility. Levels. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The models were just there. They were just chilling. They're like, oh, hey, you want to go to island? Yeah, sure. We're models. That's kind of what we do. Like, oh, you want us to advertise? That's kind of what we do. Like, I'm not mad at them per se for them being complicit, but like, it just shows how fake that it's like, you're just there because your body can advertise anything. So all we gotta do is just put you on a fucking island. We advertise the fucking island. And it's like, it's genius how they managed to advertise this through other people's celebrity. Like, they basically sucked up all the stardom of all these celebrities to advertise something. I'm like, yeah, how advertising has to work nowadays.
It's insidiously, like, effective, especially when they describe how the simplicity of the advertisement, just like, hey, all we need to do is just put this big orange square and people go like, oh, what's that?
Yeah.
That type of shit.
Although that added to one of my favorite, like, there's a bunch of, like, unintentionally and sometimes intentionally funny moments in here where they're trying to get the commercial film. You hear Ja Rule because they're trying to get the shot with the pigs. He's like, oh, yeah. Get the shot with the freaking pigs. We're getting the shot with the freaking pigs, man.
Why?
And the models are like, why the hell are we doing this? Like, you get in the water, like, if you need this shot.
That was so creepy when they were trying to, like, get him, like, wait, there's no director here. I don't care. We're going to get a shot in the pool. Come on, get in. No, we don't want.
Dude, the look on that girl's face, like, I ain't jumping in that fucking pool.
Oh, it's such uncomfortable laughter throughout it, too, because, like, you're laughing because it's so ridiculous in some situations, but you're just like, I can't believe this is happening in some. Especially, I'm not going to spoil what, but there's one big scene of something that will, you know, if you didn't think that you hated Billy McFarlane before this documentary, when you hear what he did to try to persuade someone to do something.
Oh
my God. Cause it was a producer. It was Andy King.
Yeah. So what he tells Andy King to do, I'm not going to spoil it, but it is some nasty stuff.
It's gross and it's shocking. And you're like, I can't believe.
Oh man. It was
this
hard
is happening.
Believe. Because, like, they said it really well in this documentary where they talk to one guy and goes, I'm not fucking saying that. Like, I'm not telling that fucking story. If he wants to tell the story, he can. And then it cuts to him telling the fucking story.
And that story is just as hilarious as it is fucking jaw-dropping. Because the fact that he was willing, I'm not going to say what it is, but he's willing to do it just because he believed in Billy so much. Which makes you even more pissed at Billy because of how much of a piece of shit he is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because you see this, like, kind of small progression, because it starts off with, like, let's advertise this app, then let's get a bunch of these people to set up a music festival, let's get this island, let's get this money. We know how many people are going to be interested because we sold out really quickly. But it's like, as soon as you get past the planning stage, that's when everything falls apart. That's where it got more interesting for me, because, like, the first 30 minutes is set up. It's getting you used to all these people. And I'm like, yeah, this is okay. I've watched better documentaries. But as soon as they start the planning phase, that's when this movie becomes, that's when this documentary becomes way better. But also everything starts falling apart, because you realize every single person they talk to, it's like, well, I was supposed to sign up the talent. I don't know anything about signing up talent. Like, every person's job didn't know what to do.
It's like, I've literally never done this before. I was like, how did you get hired? How
is he's like, he's like 23, 25, and it's like, oh yeah, hire some book some talent.
The thing is, how have you not have, like, someone above you to, like, manage that and help you or something? But no, he's Billy the whole time. He's either somehow getting money or he's busy getting drunk. Like, this is a point, even during the commercial shoot, where he's just passed out on the beach. And if that wasn't a fucking metaphor for everything that was going to happen. And one of my favorite people that they cut to over the course of this movie was Mark Weinstein, the festival consultant.
Oh, that poor guy.
The dude with the man bun. He was seething every moment he had to recount this damn story. Because even he was the one who was the most clear of, like, this is not going to work. You need to either shut this down, because there's a point where they realize they don't have enough people like to accommodate during the festival, that there's some people who have nowhere to live, and he's the one who's the most explicit in saying, you need to stop this. And Billy is just gleefully going like, hey, you know, no, it's good. Everything's going to be fine. We're a solutions-oriented group, not a problem-focused group.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I think him and Andy King were the two guys, at least in the managing talent, that I had any sympathy for, where I'm just like, okay, the other people, you know, back and forth, it depends on their complicitness. But those guys, when you hear the stories they tell throughout this, you're just like, man, I don't know what I would have done in that situation either.
Easy, like some of the other people, because some people were talking. Like, one of the things I appreciate about this documentary is, because you always had these situations of, why don't people just quit and leave? And it's like, well, people were getting fired left and right.
Oh, yeah.
Like that pilot who apparently learned flying through Microsoft Flight Simulator, by the way, my favorite character.
Which, like, it's legit. I've legitimately heard that before. So this, it wasn't too surprising, but it's still surprising when you hear it the first time.
Yeah, because now the fucking ending of Snakes on a Plane is slightly less laughable, but still ridiculous. For all you that know that movie, you're laughing a little bit right now.
It's just such a mismanagement, because even early on, because they're like, hey, we're doing this on Pablo Escobar's island. And when they got the island, apparently,
they're not allowed to say
the family
it.
Explicitly said, you cannot use his name. And they use it in the first damn promo. Yeah,
the very first thing they did after they said, don't use his name, they post his name on the post.
So they get kicked off and they have to go to, yeah, that's when they end up doing their show in Great Exuma.
Yeah.
And yeah, every time they cut to like the workers over there. Or especially that one woman. I don't remember what her name was.
Oh, the cook?
The most heartbreaking part of this. Yes. Because she, like, fuck it, I'll spoil at least this part. But she admits that, like, after, because the workers were working day and night. They had, what, a couple months? Which, normally with the festival, you're supposed to have at least a year of planning. They tried to do this shit in, like, less than 6 months.
6 weeks or something.
Yeah. And she had to feed, like, all these people and feed all these workers who were working literally round the clock. And she admits that she had to spend $50,000 of her own savings just to feed these people.
That hurts.
And you're sitting there, your heart sank for this woman. Because she's trying to do the best she can to just support these people and make sure that they're fed. And you're just like, livid even more.
She's on the verge of like a complete breakdown every line she's speaking about this festival. And that,
yeah, because he doesn't want to talk about it.
I know, it just hurts so much to watch that. Because her and then the other guy they cut back to now and then, like, obviously he wasn't as like broken like she was, because I mean, her legitimately, she had a reason to be broken with this stuff. But him, it's just like, yeah, the story she was telling, just like, yeah, this got out of control, this got crazy. The workers, at some point when things started to get really bad, there was like threats of like mob violence more or less from the workers.
Exactly. Like, and this is before the people even show up. They're slowly counting down with like the timer of like the Instagram timer, like this many days till the festival. And every time it got closer, I got more anxious.
Oh man!
And then that makes me afraid to ever fly out. Like we and Justin, we've gone down to like, you know, like double toasted, you know, 30-year anniversary, and like this makes me nervous. The idea of ever going down, because like that could happen to us. Like we're going down to Austin. What do you mean no one's
at
here?
At the very least,
yeah, what do you mean that they close the airport and lock us inside? The planes get out.
They booked it on the same, because they moved it to Great X. I keep forgetting the place.
Great Exuma.
And they said it was like the same week as a festival. As like a big cultural festival.
Yeah.
So they had no hotels. And so you're like, this is, I'm just waiting for the bomb to drop. And so I've never felt slightly bad for like all those influencers, but I did a little bit. Because the thing is, they were being sold an experience, at least with the ones that some people were like, hey, I sold so much of this. I sold like my life savings just to get to this. I've sold this and this and this. Yeah. I've quit my job for this. And you're just like, you feel bad, but at the same time, you don't. And it's...
Yeah.
It's a mixed bag, because, like, some people you do, but some people it's like...
And when they actually get to, like, the night of the people being in the festival, and it goes full-on Hunger Games, and it... The way the movie's shot at that point, it looks like a found footage horror movie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they even say
shot.
So. Yeah.
Because all that's real footage. Like, they didn't sit there and film it themselves. All that is real footage, because like there's a shot of the tents at night, and it's like it's eerie as fuck, because like you can't fucking see anything. You don't know who the fuck's around.
Well, because they're in the middle of a freaking island with no lights or electricity.
People are running. People are like looting. Like they went to looting so fast, and I did not feel bad for that dude.
What was it? Some woman like stole all the toilet paper at one point.
Someone pissed on mattresses. I was like, are you like? I know this is crazy, but you didn't need to go to that level that fast. Like, all they were being done is, then again, they were all mostly drunk because they kept feeding them booze for like 4 hours.
Oh, yeah. They had like nothing to eat and here drink alcohol till you pass
that
out.
Was.
Well, because even like some dude was talking about, like, yeah, we just started getting bored and we were like poking holes into the tent. We were stealing the mattresses. Like, people were
pissing on them. At that point, I was like, no, some of y'all are just assholes. Like, you didn't even need to.
Yeah,
do that.
Exactly.
That's when I lost my sympathy again. I was like, well, fuck that.
Yeah, no, and that's what makes this documentary interesting is that it is complicated with, except for the obvious people who deserve the blame, which Billy and Ja Rule.
Yeah.
But at least for a lot of these people, you feel so conflicted with how bad you should feel about some of these people. You're like, yeah, it's like, yeah, on the one hand, it's sad that these people got scammed out of their money. But on the other hand, some of those people were outright just douche nozzles to begin with. So you're just like, I don't know if I really feel bad for them getting their money stolen because they were going to just blow it on some other stupid convention anyways or stupid concert.
It's hard to some, like, as far as the people attending, it's like that's a mixed bag, but like as far as the people working, it's like some people were just legit trying to do their job.
Yeah.
Like a lot, like even outside the locals straight didn't get paid, but like a lot of people were working trying to get this festival off the ground. We don't even know if they got paid. Like one of the women was saying, like, hey, our favorite game to play on Friday was did you get paid and in the right amount? Like it's such a difficult thing to kind of like talk about because it's like some of the like the most complicit people 100% are the top, because there's another person we're not talking about, what's his face, Grant, who reminds me of Phil Fish for some fucking reason.
Yeah,
I keep getting Phil Fish vibes from him, and he was just as complicit, if not more, because I don't think he had any regret or remorse or anything. No.
And one thing that killed me, though, also was right before the festival started, the night before, that they were talking about the big monsoon that happened the night before. And I was they said they lost their minds. Like, they legitimately started laughing. And I was like, yep, this, I would do the same, because that's an act of God telling you, hey, you don't stop, don't do this. And the fact that it keeps going on afterwards, because I won't say what happens, but they keep going till after the festival has gone on and Billy's gotten all these lawsuits and everything, and he's still doing shit.
That's the thing that got me. Like, that's the part where I really started to really like this documentary. It's like, okay, you think it's starting to wind down, you think it's all over, and then the movie goes, oh no, it's not over yet. You're just like, oh, wait, it's not over?
That's where you're like, no, this man is a fucking criminal. Like, even though you were saying that before, but like, he was still doing shit even on bail. And whatever he does, I won't say again, but like, it's, you're just like, I can't believe you, dude.
And man, if I didn't think that Ja Rule was terrible to begin with, the part
post-festival meeting.
Yes, that's the part where it's like, it's like, that's what fraud is! Come on!
Yeah, look up the definition of fraud and understand how wrong you are.
That was astounding to me. And even, I know you brought it up before, Alan, but that, when they talked about, like, the cultural reaction, that people were, we were having, like, a fit, like, of schadenfreude to, like, these kids. And the main thing that did it was the picture of the cheese sandwich.
Cheese sandwich.
Yes. So
I love the way they phrased it. Like, it took, you know, like, there was one woman with like a million subscribers who helped people get funded to the festival, and it took one dude with 400 followers on Twitter to destroy it with a picture of a cheese sandwich.
Yeah, because they basically bring it up as like, yeah, this entire festival was sold on the star power of a bunch of models and a bunch of singers, celebrities, and all that shit, and it was brought down by one nobody that only had a couple hundred followers. And that's where I kind of like, that's what I found out, because like, we talked about this on the Midnight Chat Tech, where we talk about a lot of new stuff, and the image came up of just that cheese sandwich, and then this whole story, it's like people paid like hundreds of thousands of dollars almost, and all they get is fucking like cheese on bread, and it's like, holy shit, because like, when you hear about the shit from the news, you kind of laugh, but then this documentary shows that these people were basically just sent on an island and just forgotten about until, I don't even know how most of them got off. Like, how did those people get back home? You know,
when they said some of the people didn't have charters to come back home, I was screaming. Like, prisoners get fed better food than that cheese sandwich.
And better living quarters sometimes.
I was so engrossed in this craziness. And the funny thing about it is that I mentioned that Jerry Media, who had dealt with the marketing of the thing, of like the whole festival, who also co-produces movie. It's funny because just a couple days before this came out, Hulu came with their own documentary.
Man, talk about the dick measuring contest going on
here. The pettiest streaming service in the world.
They brought this out of nowhere.
I thought it was Amazon at first, but Hulu was starting to become the more petty one in comparison.
It was hilarious, and I actually watched both of them just to get a big comparison. And honestly, I think you need to see both at once. Like, if you're going to watch it, you have to watch both because it brings a bigger side of the story. Because
from what I heard, is the Hulu one focuses more on
yes,
Billy, right?
It's a more traditional documentary because the way the Netflix one is shot, it's more just like first-hand accounts of every single person. While the big the Hulu one is more just like analysis of like how the fuck did this go down and what led to this. Mostly focusing on Billy and mostly focusing on like a lot of it, like his big credit card pseudo credit card thing called Magnesis and just his history just essentially being a scammer. And the big one is that also that they got an interview with Billy. But the thing is with Billy is that he just provides a lot of nothing. He gives a lot of, like, it's very clear that he's still under investigation, and so he doesn't really give anything as much as just give big blank stares of looking like a fucking idiot, and still not really taking accountability and not really giving any insight on anything.
Jeez Louise.
God damn.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess in comparison then, I mean, obviously we're mostly reviewing the Netflix one, but if you compare which one you think, I mean,
you do legitimately need to see both because it provides a bigger sense of the scope of the story. And also, it shows a lot more of just like Ja Rule and how he kind of was even more complicit than people think he is.
But in terms of like filmmaking, like if you say like a well-made movie, which like, say gets the
I
edge
think in terms of just like, I was more interested in the Netflix side of things because I think the way the people told it, I think the way it was shot was better because this was directed by, what's his name here? I have his name up.
Oh, yeah.
Chris Smith, who's also known for doing American Movie, which is also another super successful documentary about a guy trying to make a movie. And
He also did Jim and Andy last year, the Jim Carrey documentary.
And so, like, he provides a lot of stylistic flair into this, which you didn't think would happen, but it does work. And I think Hulu works on its own merits. Like, it works as, again, like a straight doc. But I was more entertained by the Netflix one because I think the stories were more interesting because they were from the people who made the damn thing in the first place. And it doesn't absolve them in any way whatsoever, but it's more interesting to hear from the ground floor.
Well, and then all the other fans and the workers and the people who maybe weren't as complicit and the people who were actually like victims of this. I'm sure like do they give more of that to the Netflix people or does Hulu cover that?
Hulu does cover it. In fact, some of the people cross over like what's his name? Seth Krosno, the one who was the main, I would say it's like the main person live tweeting how much of a disaster this thing was. He comes back also, and he's providing his accounts. And then there's the guy, I don't remember his name, but the one who came, who found out about how much of a fraud this shit was early on and created that Twitter account.
Oh, the guy who
financier? The financier.
Yeah, the...
He gets a lot more airtime in the Hulu one, and he's talking about, like, him talking to various companies. Like, at one point, Comcast almost invested into it, and he's like, don't do it until after the festival. And see what happens to make sure that this is a full-on scam.
Well, as much as I'm not crazy about Comcast, that's a good call for Comcast to not invest in this.
It was a good call. And even, like, former employees of Jerry Media, they also, like, get into, like, because a lot of the ones in the Netflix one were, like, current ones. And the big one for Hulu was, like, a former employee. He's like, listen, so much of this shit went wrong. Even the promoters were still doing this shit. And even at the very end of the Hulu one, they say, hey, there's another documentary one, taking full-on shots at the Netflix one.
Oh,
like, if you thought they went petty, they went petty.
What is this fucking world we're living in? Documentaries are taking shots at each other? What the fuck is this
shit? The plight of the people of fire is really sad, but screw Netflix.
Yeah, anyway, I do kind of want to wrap things up a little bit, so I want to start getting personal thoughts. So, Alan, starting with you, what do you think of this whole thing overall?
You know, through the whole time, it's funny because it's hard to rate documentaries. That's why I usually don't do these for Screener Squad, but I had to make an exception for this one because this was just too good a story to pass up, I feel personally. But I think this was a very well done documentary. And it's definitely the big thing about it is entertaining. As horrible as the story is about what happened to these people and what these people were doing, just, you know, the people on top as these scumbags, it's still very involving to watch. And you can see why there are people out there who just binge watch these kind of true crime documentaries or these kind of special, you know, believe it or not, horrifying series kind of thing. You know, it's really involving. I really, really enjoyed this. I guess it never got to that point where it just wowed me, like, oh, I've never seen a documentary do this before. But it really got me, especially, like I said, again, the fact that I thought the movie was over and then they went, oh, no, this is where the story continues. And it just went even deeper into the rabbit hole. I'm just like, OK, you got me, Netflix. I'm hooked. So I'm going to 8.5 out of 10 really funny talk show interviews.
Oh, that was great when they cut to Ron Funches. His line was just killer. Alan, what about you? What'd you think?
The funny thing is, because I recently watched Surviving R. Kelly, which is a docuseries. So I've always really enjoyed documentaries, like, just because, like, Making a Murder on Netflix. I recommend that. Check it out. Just because I like when they have, you know, the firsthand account of people talking. Because just people telling their story to the camera, they're always able to do it in these interesting ways, even if it's just people talking to a camera. So this is definitely up there. It's a good length. It's only an hour and a half, so I didn't feel like I was there for 4 hours.
Yeah, I was shocked how short it was.
It gets to the point, and it also it really builds up, because like I said, like it gets crazier and crazier as it goes along. It starts off kind of like the build up, like, I'm not sure if I'm gonna enjoy this, but it gets crazier and crazier, and yeah, like Shaq said, that sense of dread right when people show up, like, okay, they're managing to make these real life events feel like I'm watching a movie. So it's like it's almost unbelievable, but all this is true facts, because like some people will remember where they were when they heard certain pieces of information. So honestly, I highly fucking recommend this. Like, if you've heard about this, there's going to be something in here you didn't hear about. There's going to be some side of the story you have no idea. And if you don't know about this, you're going to look this up after that. Go, how much of this was real? You're like, oh, shit. It's like, there are some things I need to look up. Like, I don't believe some of this stuff. Like, I have to look up some of this stuff. But as far as out of 10, I'll probably give it an 8 out of 10. Because, like, I really, really enjoyed it. But it's not like a documentary I'm going to remember forever. But it's definitely a story I'll remember forever.
Oh, so 8 out of 10 watts, though?
Oh, 8 out of 10 Fyre Festival tickets.
I bought them on discount.
They're on sale right now.
So yeah, overall, I really, really did enjoy this. Like you guys, it's very, very involving. It's very cringeworthy and terrifying because you're just afraid because you, like, it's one of those things where, like, it's like a really good thriller, but you know the ending and you know it goes somewhere really, really bad.
Yeah.
It is a bit slight in the sense that, like, I feel like the advertisers, they feel like, I think they got a bit too clean off, at least where it goes with, like, compared to the Hulu documentary. But at the same time, I recommend seeing both because it gives you two sides of the same coin. And it expands a lot of information that you actually don't get in the Netflix one. So I'd say check both out. But for what it's worth of the Netflix one, I had a blast watching this. Again, like Alan said, if you don't know the full story, you are going to want to know the full story. And so I'm going to give this 8.5 out of 10 shitty salad garnishes on top of the cheese sandwich.
Seriously, it's like a slice of tomato, a slice of lettuce, and a slice of onion, people.
Dude, it was like, if you, I don't even know how to describe it. Like, you need to see a picture of this cheese sandwich, dude.
Oh, Lord.
So, guys, we're running a music festival next year, right?
Oh, dude. All of Us Music Festival. That's where we're going to do it, man.
Can we do
All
a worse job? Dude,
listen. We know what the bottom is. We can't go anywhere.
Exactly. As long as we go above the bottom, we're good.